someone in the shop saw that I was reading something and thought it was suspicious enough that they decided to call the FBI, and the FBI responded.
A new movement that's developing where white folks are starting to think, well, what does race mean to me?
That he was immature to have to base the love of black people on devaluing white people, but he talked about black people loving themselves.
The only place that the women are safe in Iraq, in Baghdad, are only in the mosques.
When they receive the $80, I'm sure that they will feel very frustrated and very angry against the American forces.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Tuesday, July 29th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. American forces searching for Saddam Hussein said interrogations of 12 suspects arrested today in Tikrit and reams of documents found in their houses should help soldiers close in on the fugitive dictator. An audio tape attributed to Saddam said the deaths of his sons was, quote, good news, unquote, because they were martyrs. In the audio tape broadcast by the Dubai-based Al Arabiya satellite channel, a voice that resembled Saddam's said he was glad O'Day and Qusay Hussein were killed on July 22nd in a firefight with U.S. soldiers because such a death is, quote, the hope of every fighter, unquote. Some Iraqis had doubted the bodies were those of Saddam's sons, accusing the U.S. of staging the shootout in the northern city of Mosul to demoralize Saddam's supporters. The U.S. released photographs of the sons and let journalists film their bodies in an attempt to convince Iraqis they were really dead. With 10 soldiers killed in the past 6 days, U.S. forces face the deadliest period so far in Iraq. U.S. officials had thought that the killing last week of Saddam Hussein's two sons would stop some of the attacks against U.S. forces in Iraq because it would show Saddam's supporters and former members of the Ba'ath Party that the regime had truly come to an end. But instead, the days following the deaths of Uday and Qusay have in fact been the deadliest period so far, with 10 American soldiers killed, including 5 in one 24-hour period over the weekend. Peace Watch spoke earlier today with our Baghdad correspondent, Ahmed Arawi, to ask how he interprets the recent rise in attacks and why the deaths of Uday and Qusay haven't had any effect in stopping them.
The American administration claims all the time that all the resistance in Iraq is caused by the former Ba'ath members. But actually, the resistance is partly due to the popular resistance. There is a popular outrage and anger against the American administration and its negative role inside Iraq. In Iraq, there are still tribal customs and traditions. So if one of the American soldiers kills a man who belongs to a certain tribe, his tribe will avenge the death of this man by killing. This actually happens in the areas in the central and western and somehow into the northern Baghdad. This is one part of the resistance. There is another part which is a little bit religious, considering the American presence as banned by Islamic religion. So it is the duty of the Muslim to fight the Americans. Not all the resistance is caused by former Ba'ath members. And the killing of Uday and Qusay would never stop those people from continuing their resistance against the American troops.
What would stop them from continuing their resistance against the American troop? Would it require them to simply exit and end their occupation there, or anything short of that?
Well, I'm sure that if the American administration holds a free election for all Iraqi people so that they can elect their own independent government, and I say independent because almost all Iraqis now consider the newly established governing Iraqi council to be a puppet committee, actually, because all of them have been are infamous. Most of them have been receiving money from CIA and other sources, so they really have a bad reputation among Iraqis. So I think if there is a free election to elect a government, an independent one, where Iraqis can have their own courts, I think this will solve a lot of problems. I'll give an example of the of some of the frustration. Now the American administration is trying to pay salaries for Iraqi officers, Iraqi army officers, actually. There are, you know, thousands of those army officers inside Iraq. So what happens is that they wait in a very long queue. I mean, I have never seen such a queue in my life. They wait and under the sun, and I mean, almost all the street is blocked because of those people. I mean, this is part of a humiliation. They wait for half a day. Exactly half a day just to receive the $80 emergency salary. I mean, this will also create part of this frustration. I mean, those army officers, for example, have pride because they were accustomed to respect. When they are subject to such a treatment, I am sure that when they receive the $80, I am sure that they will feel very frustrated and very angry against the American forces.
And why are they being paid?
I think this is my point of view, I'll tell you. I think the American administration thinks that it should pay the army because the army may cause real troubles. There were many demonstrations before that by the Iraqi army. Of course, the most of the members of the Iraqi army, they wanted their salaries to be paid. Otherwise, they will fight the Americans. I think, this is my point of view, that the American administration is trying to calm those people down a little bit by paying them salaries so that they won't turn against them. I think this is part of the reason. And at the same time, not to create unemployment and crimes inside the street, because what will this army officer do if he doesn't have any money and he has a very big or a very large family? What will he do? How will he support his family?
And so what about others that need employment there in Iraq? Are others being paid for services? Is there an opportunity to work and to earn money to feed families?
And now it has been announced that a new Iraqi army will be established. Many people are now getting enrolled inside this army. They will be paid also. Most of the ministries are now functioning, though not in the right sense of the word, because most of the ministries' buildings have been looted or destroyed by the looters. So they just come for one or 2 days in a week just to see each other and see what's if there is any updated news. But generally speaking, only those institutions that were closely related to the Ba'ath regime have been dissolved, and the members of these institutions have not been paid.
So there is and continues to be a level of chaos and criminality that prevails there, it sounds as though you're saying.
Sure. Today I was actually interviewing a small girl, a teenager. She was subject to a kidnapping attempt by a gang. There were four men trying to kidnap this girl after finishing her exams at school. She was rescued actually by her mother, and she was really terrified, and she would never go to school again. But with the persuasion of her family and the protection of her mother, actually, she managed to continue the exams. Her mother carried a gun in her suitcase, just to protect her daughter and to let her finish the exam so that she would enter college. This is one example. Actually, there are tens of cases in Baghdad where there are many incidents of kidnapping and ransoming people. And now ransoming is done by being paid in dollars, not in Iraqi dinars. all the people say that it's because of the lack of security and order in Iraq. Actually, when I interviewed those people, many of them, they say there were no American troops or soldiers around. That's why those gangs were free to do whatever they wanted. They also say that there was an amnesty by Saddam Hussein before the war, releasing all those criminals from prisons. They say that these works are done by those particular criminals.
Here in the U.S., the mass media is pretty much saturated with all sorts of news coming from Iraq and about the situation there, but it's rare that we actually hear the voices of Iraqis. Is there some sort of message that you think is missing that's not getting out from the Iraqi people themselves?
Well, actually, I think the American administration wants to paint a picture, a bright picture of its achievement and its role inside Iraq. What concerns Iraqis right now is their security and safety more than anything else. People want to feel safe, actually. Want to feel safe when they go out in the streets. They want to live freely. I mean, it's right that the American administration got rid of Saddam Hussein and his regime, but brought the so-called democracy into Iraq. But not on the expense of safety and security to Iraqis.
Ahmed Arawi is Peace Watch's Baghdad correspondent. He says that whenever he tells ordinary Iraqis that he works for an American radio program, they often stop talking to him because they are afraid. Arawi's report on the kidnapping of Iraqi children will air on Peace Watch in coming weeks. Closer to home, activists concerned about the continuing occupation of Iraq and the worsening humanitarian and security situation recently held a rally here in the nation's capital to discuss new directions for the peace movement. Peace Watch correspondent Anthony Sloan presents this mix featuring local activists and former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel from Maine.
You've all heard the saying, no justice, no peace. You've all heard the saying, if you want peace, fight for justice. You might have heard Martin Luther King's statement, peace is not the absence of violence, it's the presence of justice. So it's quite clear that justice is what we need if we want to have peace. And the question is, how are we going to get to a world of justice, a world that works for everybody? The promise of America is the promise of democracy. We all have seen how democracy has stumbled since Florida. And so it's important that we make the effort to reclaim democracy.
And I'm saying like this, people of the world and all over D.C., man, this does not make no sense. See, and they still ain't found what they looking for. We need to get that white ASS out of office. He cheated his way in, right? And we're going to get him up out of here, 2004.
Our focus is obviously on getting people organized, you know, against the occupation at a time when people in this country really have absolutely no interest in that occupation, when the $39 million a month that's being spent on the occupation or even more could be spent paying teachers' salaries, giving us universal health care, paying benefits to people who don't have jobs right now, and a million other things that I'm not even naming.
The bottom line is, number one, there certainly is no guarantee that we're going to get rid of George Bush. And number two, when you look at the Democrats that are running against Bush, some of them aren't so hot either. I'm not saying it's out of the frying pan and into the fire, but what I'm saying is this. We need to beware of letting the electoral political process interfere with our activism. We need grassroots organizing. And in fact, I would say if you want to get rid of George Bush, probably the best way to do it is to get out there, turn public opinion around, and that's how we're going to get rid of George Bush.
I think that truth is an important thing. I mean, if we look at this war that's going on here now, we see that there were four main reasons for going to war: nuclear weapons, chemical and biological weapons, links to terrorists, and immediate threats to U.S. national security. These were the clearly stated, oft-stated, repeatedly stated reasons given by the administration for this invasion. But none of that stuff really happened. So now the neocons have switched the whole thing to talk about how wonderful the United States is because they have freed the Iraqi people. Despite the fact that the United States, under Mr. Bremer, is censoring their newspapers, appointing their government, and shooting their protesters.
In August of 2002, a senior British official said, and this was quoted in the Newsweek, "Everyone wants to go to Baghdad. Real men want to go to Tehran." And as a woman from Middle East, I do not want your real men in Tehran. Because we see that today in Iraq, the women of Iraq have been subjected to kidnapping, rapes, and all kinds of crimes since the occupation of the U.S. And this is the report of the Human Rights Watch. The Human Rights Watch has said that they demand that something be done about the crimes that are happening to the women in Iraq as a result of the occupation there. And the women in Iraq have gone underground. And the Washington Post reports that the only place that the women are safe in Iraq, in Baghdad, are only in the mosques.
Bremer was on TV saying, oh, it's just this handful of hardcore Ba'athist survivors that are out there mounting military campaigns, and the vast majority of the Iraqi people fully support the U.S. occupation. Well, this is a delusion. We know this. We know that what's going on right now is the beginnings of a national resistance, a national liberation struggle. I mean, we've seen it again and again and again. We need above all to be in solidarity with the Iraqi people. So I would say that impeaching Cheney, that's a strategy. Impeaching Bush is a strategy. It's fine and dandy, but let's not lose sight of the prize. Organizing, educating, and agitating until we have built a movement that really, truly turns it around.
When I was a senator, and this goes for any elected official in the United States or in the world tied to representative government, when an issue comes up for a vote, now obviously you know what the public interest is, otherwise you shouldn't be there, but what comes into a person's mind? How is this vote going to affect me, my reelection, my staying here? Then the second thing that comes to mind is, how is this going to affect the people who put the money up to get me here and keep me here? And then next comes, how is this going to affect my party? Because when my party's in power, I got more power. And then maybe after all of that comes the public interest. That's the way representative government works. Because these are based on human nature. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm saying that is human nature, and that's what you're stuck with. Now, when we empower the people to make laws, and it's on a majoritarian basis, what really happens? They are the public interest. There are no barriers to arriving at the public interest. And that's what's fundamentally right. Important to understand.
What some people are afraid of, after years and years of the system that we have, which operates by building resentment between groups, you know, the divide and conquer thing, everybody is always in fear of the class that's lower than. They never look upward. They blame the poorer people.
But that's
how do you get past that?
Well, first off, that's self-evident. I'll tell you how you get past it. You're telling me that you've got the guts to get out there and protest X number of hours a week on Lafayette Square. Well, I'll tell you what. Do me a favor. Cut that in half and spend the rest of the time on a friend, your own computer, or a friend's computer, and get people to vote. To vote on the computer. For the national initiative. That's where you should be putting your energies. And it's not a loser. And I just invite you, go read the legislation. You'll be awestruck as to how we cover all the bases. Now, this legislation took 10 years to write. 10 years. And we finally got it up and going. And now, after 6 months of doing the technology, you can vote for this on the internet. And you can get 10 people. Stop and think. If 10 people got 10 people, we'd enact this in 1 year. We're talking about the realities of life, and that is, there is no way that the people will ever overcome the corporate power and the individual power of wealth.
Which is
no way, unless you make an end run around the government, because they control the government, and that's what this is. This is an end run around the government.
But we will never have peace in the world until men everywhere recognize that ends are not cut off from means. And ultimately, you can't reach good ends through evil means, because the means represent the seed and the end represents the tree.
Sounds from a recent anti-war rally in Washington, D.C., prepared by Peace Watch correspondent Anthony Sloan. Well, protesting the war and expressing viewpoints critical of the Bush administration can get you in trouble in some quarters. That's what Mark Schultz, a freelance writer in Atlanta, recently discovered. He shared his story with Jerry Quickly of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles.
It happened on a Tuesday afternoon. They came to my house. I was at work at the time. I work in a bookstore. And my mother called and said, "Son, the FBI are here for you. You're not in trouble." That was the mantra, that you're not in trouble. So they sat me down. We sat down in the back of the store in the reference section, and they start by asking me. See, up to this point, I'm thinking that they're here to check on one of my friends. They're doing a background check. Maybe one of my friends has got a government job. It doesn't occur to me that they're there to speak to me. The first thing they ask, though, is, "Do you drive a black Nissan Altima?" And I start thinking, oh, they want to talk about me. So they try and they ask me if I was in this coffee shop on Saturday, if I brought anything in with me. I'm not recalling any of this. And they decide to level with me that someone in the shop saw that I was reading something and thought it was suspicious enough that they decided to call the FBI. And the FBI responded. The comment they make to me is that it's not a problem, there's no problem, we just need to find out the title of the article and the author and what it's about, and if we can't get to the bottom of this, then you may have a problem.
Right.
You don't want that.
Then you're going to have a real problem, my friend.
Yeah.
The moment you stop cooperating is the day you get the free vacation to Cuba.
Right, exactly. And I did. Looking back, I wish I'd given them a harder time. But at the time, I'm just thinking, well, I haven't done anything wrong. I just want these guys to leave me alone.
The bottom line is, even as outraged as you may be by any intrusion by the FBI in your life, it is intimidating. No one wants it, and no one's looking to engage it, and you want it to be over with as quickly as possible. Unless you're a maniac, and the fact that you work in a bookstore indicates you might be a maniac. But other than that, you seem like a fairly sane person.
Yeah, I'm pretty on the level, I think. I do, however, I have grown a beard, and I feel like that may have been a factor.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You've grown a beard, and you work in a bookstore, and you expect them to believe you're not a terrorist? Are you on the pipe, Mark?
I don't want to answer that. I think reading while bearded is what really, really sealed the deal for me. The article I was called, as it turns out, after they left was when I remembered. I was able to figure out what it was I was reading. An article by Hal Crowther called Weapons of Mass Stupidity, about mass media and the dumbing down of mass media, mostly focusing on Rupert Murdoch and Fox News, and how they're like lowering the bar for news coverage in the country.
So, Mark, after you identified this dangerous material that you were reading, that you had no business reading because it's just troublemakers and anti-American freaks like you that are ruining this country, but I won't go there right now, Mark. After you identified this, after you identified the material, what did they say? What was their response?
Well, that was it. I ended up leaving a message, actually. The agent who visited me left me his card, and so I called the number and I told them all the information about the article, and I haven't heard from them since. I wish now that I had. I wish I had sat on the information to see what they were going to do. But yeah, it seems to have disappeared. They will neither confirm nor deny my story.
There's an article that was written about this in the Weekly Planet, and it's an article that you had written about your experience. And one of the quotes in the article is, "One of the agent Trippy which is just, you know, it's too good. Too good a name for an agent. Special. What's your agent? What's your name? Special Agent Trippy. Special Agent Trippy asked you, were you at the Caribou Coffee on Powers Ferry Road about 8:30 in the morning on Saturday? I mean, I wouldn't even know how to answer that. All of a sudden, like everything, I would think anything I'd done is wrong. I'm probably breathing wrong, and I'm definitely going to jail. Whenever I get stopped by cops, you know, it doesn't matter even what color they are, let alone like, you know, big, burly, white FBI guys. It just freaks me out. I probably would have, you know, fortunately I wear adult diapers. Other than that, I probably would have had a problem.
It really makes you question, well, what if I was doing something wrong? What, am I forgetting something? Did I have nuclear devices on me?
Right, right. Did I have 5 pounds of hashish in the trunk of my car? Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Are they going to find the pictures of me and the Angora cat? You know, you have to ask yourself these questions when you deal with the FBI, because you never know. So so they never got back in touch with you after their initial inquiry and you finally fessing up about the seditious material you had no business reading in public? They ever come after you again?
I don't know if Cobb County is as infamous in California as it is here, but that's where I live, is Cobb County, where Newt Gingrich comes from.
Mm-hmm.
We were involved in a fiasco during the Olympics about, I think, something about how the county wouldn't support any art that had anything to do with gays, and we're the object of a big protest. Anyways, it's a huge right-wing hotbed, and I'm thinking maybe someone was reading over.
And there's
my
no
shoulder.
Gay people involved in sports, so that shouldn't have even been a controversy.
Right.
But anyway,
right. So it could have been some nutty Fox News fan who lives in the area who thought he was doing Fox News a favor by calling in the liberal to the FBI.
Well, how's this impacted your life, Mark? I mean, has this really made any kind of dent in how you view your place in the world, or your reading selections, or your internet browsing? Because I would think that maybe I'm on some kind of list and I'm being monitored. Did you think that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that certainly entered my mind. I do visit, you know, I visit salon.com and I go to actforchange.com and I write letters to my senators. And so, I mean, that could have turned up any number of red flags, I imagine. I'm planning on going to the University of Georgia for grad school in journalism.
Oh, my, you're just a nonstop threat. You, my friend, are the biggest threat ever. You've got a beard. You're anti-Newt Gingrich. You're not down with O'Reilly. You're not down with Lucky Charms and Combs. You are reading seditious material, pornographic text in public, and you want to be a journalist?
I'm a quintuple threat is what I call myself.
Quintuple threat indeed. Well, you know what? I'm really glad that you are studying journalism, because you actually need, I think, more journalists that have lived in the world and had experiences with government agencies that will actually give them some reason to have some critical analysis and some critical pause about government claims, as opposed to just swallowing it all, accepting it all, and believing that everything government has to say is righteous. I'd much rather see journalists act like journalists rather than act like Pentagon press office. You know, they get a press release and they treat it like it's news. Like, what happened to investigative journalism? That's a bad word now.
The whole point of journalism, it seems to me, is to ask questions to try and get to the bottom of things, and that's just not being done. I mean, especially on Fox News, where they treat every government press release like it's gospel.
Right. Well, Mark, I think your experience with Agent Trippy was just really unbelievable. I'm glad that for the moment things are okay and you're not in jail, and they haven't arrested you for, you know, not being down with Rupert Murdoch. This is the country we live in, folks, where people who work in bookstores read something about Rupert Murdoch and the police come and visit them.
Well, the whole thing's ridiculous from top to bottom. Why a terrorist would be reading How to Be a Terrorist in line to get coffee doesn't make any sense at all.
Freelance writer Mark Schultz speaking with Jerry Quickly of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. To read his account of the incident, go to www.weeklyplanet.com. Special thanks to Christine Blasdale and Fidel Rodriguez for production assistance with that piece. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.